Yeah, so I know right now you're just going back and forth between Olympics and Bachelor Winter Games. I know.
I love how you just pretended that you watched the Bachelor Winter Games show for me.
But yeah, so it's all, so like, you know, the holidays happen and now it's the Olympics and a lot of our favorite shows are gone right now. So yeah. Except for Buffy, which is never gone.
Buffy never leaves. No.
She never dies. She never leaves.
Well, I mean, she kind of does die. Yeah, don't
worry. Okay, she always dies, but she always comes back after she dies.
Yeah.
Hi, and welcome to Hey Bestie. We're best friends, Sarah and Kim, and we're introverts who like to talk. Since 2018 started, we've been talking a lot about our goals and some things that we've been trying to stick to.
Mm-hmm.
I do have one more sort of resolution or goal. It's kind of an accidental resolution that kind of happened since the beginning of the year. As a result of me trying to make more time for myself, doing yoga, meditation, and just in general, trying to work on more personal projects, which mm-hmm. I think that we're both kind of doing. So I just love that. I think that that's been really positive for both of us. And podcasting is on my list. I want to keep up with this podcasting.
Yes.
Whether it's like, I don't know. We started out, what, like once a week, every other week?
Yeah, I feel like every other week is much more manageable for us just with everything else. But
it is. I mean, we have full-time jobs.
Then you hit kind of stuff like one of us is traveling or holidays and it just gets harder and harder. But
yeah, I mean, that's not what I wanted to talk about. But if any fellow podcasters are out there listening, like it's hard if you have two full-time jobs, even if you don't. It's just like it is a big time commitment, but it's something that if you really enjoy it, like obviously like we do really enjoy it, you can stick with it. Maybe not like at a consistent, like
we would enjoy it more though if Skittles would finally send those Skittles
or right? HGTV
right
or Magnolia Market can like sponsor us
right. Then we would like it even more. Okay, I'm sorry for bringing Skittles into this again. I'm sorry, Skittles. This is no way to get you to send me Skittles.
Well, it is kind of rude that Mrs. Skittles like listens to our podcast,
right?
Obviously, every episode and still hasn't said anything. I literally
ate Skittles on here before for you, Skittles, while it's talking. Just,
it's pretty rude.
What more do you want?
But going back to goals,
mm-hmm, yeah,
resolutions, whatever you want to call them, we've been chatting about and supporting lots of work and change for each other, which I think is great. And we chat about therapy specifically a lot because it's just so important.
Right.
And it's become a really necessary part of both of our lives. And we attribute a lot of positive things to it. As I mentioned before, I'm looking to go back to therapy really soon. I feel like I need to be really honest for a second about a couple of things because I feel like maybe somebody's listening and they can relate to it. And even if not, it's just, I think, something that has something in it that everybody can relate to, which is that therapy is sort of this thing that you think like, I only need it if I feel really bad. And sometimes you do need like that nudge to remind you that even if everything's going great now, it's usually not about what's happening now. It's about how you're reacting to what's happening now.
Right.
And why? And when did you set those patterns and why? And do you still need those behaviors? Do you still need that type of reaction? Is it serving you? And if the answer is no, then you can work with somebody who like knows about that stuff and can help you identify sort of the issues and work with you. And if you've got mental health issues, it's about managing that too, because not everything is going to go completely away. It might just be a part of who you are. Some of it might be more manageable than other parts. It might include medication. It might include just talking it out. There are all sorts of different things. It's just about managing it and achieving that balance and understanding that these things are part of you. And maybe some of it you can change, but maybe some of it you can't. And you just have to learn how to live with it.
And then also, I mean, I have to be really honest and say that I did start right after the inauguration last year. Mm-hmm. And that definitely was like the nudge that I needed because I felt so I don't even know. I mean, I was really sad and like just felt really bad after.
Yeah, I think a lot of people can relate to that. Yeah.
All of that. So it was like this nudge I needed just to go because it was just like, even though my life otherwise was great, like not everything that's bad in the government really affects me personally, but I'm like really, really, really naturally like really empathetic to people and mm-hmm. stuff really, really bothers me whenever I see injustice or just anything like that. So it's really hard for me to live in a world where that stuff is just going on all the time and just ignore it. Like, I'm not going to ignore it. And so therapy helps me with that a lot, too.
So for me, I had like a big level up in my life when I first came to Austin, and a lot of things were going so much better than they had gone in my life before. And I felt like I had like socioeconomically like leveled up just plain on mm-hmm. paper, but then also in a lot of personal ways. My friendships were really good, stable, healthy. I found stable employment. I was in a better financial situation than I had ever been in. It took a lot of work to get to that point. But once I was at that point, it was sort of like, oh, I'm in this great place. So obviously I'm doing better than I ever have. So I should just feel great all the time. Right. When I wasn't feeling great, I was looking at external things like, oh, I just like live in the wrong city and I need to move again, which I do have a history of like trying to move around and seek like going to different places, because if I just change my entire life and all of my surroundings, then things will feel better. And so I started like falling back into that pattern and thinking that I wanted to like leave my job and leave my city and get a new house, which I did just get a new house, but that was a good, healthy decision. But I'm sort of like letting that stuff go too. And part of me seeking therapy now is sort of like working out that issue, but then also realizing that I can be okay where I am. And I think that's been a big part of the last like 6 months to a year, but something that is sort of just an overarching goal. I don't need to look at changing everything around me all the time to feel better or feel more stable, that maybe it is sort of like an internal thing that I'm always struggling with. If things aren't exactly the way that I envisioned it, maybe there are ways that I can change that just by working with what I have.
Right.
Or I can improve my situation in small ways, which this move was very much that. Like the place that we were in previously, we had outgrown it. But because I had told myself that my next move needed to be like, oh, I'm moving to a different country or I'm moving to a different city at least, I kind of was ignoring the fact that we could make that change now in a small way by moving to a bigger place. I don't know, just knowing that you can make little small changes in your life and not everything has to be some sort of like big overhaul in order for you to feel better. Sometimes those small changes feel just as hard as big things. And maybe you need like a little bit of like encouragement or help with that kind of stuff too. So right. That's been sort of like a big revelation for me.
That kind of reminded me of one thing I had worked on in therapy recently was I had these boxes in my garage, like probably like, I want to say probably like 8 like boxes and bins, like pretty good sized in my garage that were just in a stack off to the side that I was trying to ignore. When we moved up to the Dallas area, that was like in, was it like 2012? I don't know. It was a good amount of years ago now. When we were moving, the day we were loading up our moving truck, my mom came over to help us like move, and she was going to drive with us up to Dallas because we needed somebody to drive our extra car, and she was coming up with us and everything. So she brought these boxes over in her car and was like, these are yours. I've had them at my house. And she just put them in our moving truck. Mm-hmm. And I didn't at the time have like any time or interest in figuring out what was in them because I was moving. I was trying to finish packing. And so we got to Dallas, we didn't move to Dallas right away, but the Dallas area. And then we put those boxes aside because they obviously weren't like my household goods because I didn't even know what was in them. So I, you know, it wasn't like a priority to unpack them. But then at some point I like kind of looked in them and I noticed what was in there. And then I just left them because I just did not have the ability to go through them at the time. And then they stayed like that at the entire time we rented the other house. And then we moved over to this house that we bought in Dallas. And they went in the garage and they stayed in a stack off to the side. And so I kept ignoring them. And then finally I thought, like, I feel like I'm ignoring them, like, so much that I'm actually thinking about them. Like,
yeah, they're in my garage. Yeah, I was going to say, that would make me really curious because then I'd wonder, like, wait, what's in them, though?
Right, they're in my garage. And so it's like, I kept them in the garage so they wouldn't be in the way in the house and I wouldn't, like, see them or whatever. But I feel like I also, like, you know, like, when you're trying not to see something, it's like you're putting effort into not seeing it. So then you're kind of still seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it was like. So I wasn't really thinking about it until during therapy, like, several months in. I kind of mentioned to my therapist, I was like, I have these boxes. They've moved with me, like, twice. I've barely glanced in them. I feel very, my husband has offered to like go through them, throw them away, do whatever I want with them. But I just felt like really strongly that I couldn't let him do anything with them, that I had to do it. They just kept sitting there and sitting there and sitting there. And we like to park in our garage and do projects in there when we're renovating our house. So they've kind of been in the way, you know? And so now when we started doing this whole project where we're like, everything has to have a place and we're not having any kind of like pack rat kind of tendencies, and that extends to our garage because we're setting up a woodworking area in there and we want to park both of our cars in there. So I brought them up to my therapist and we talked about it. I don't know, we went over it like a few different times. She would ask me like, have you gone through them yet? Have you looked in them? How are you feeling about them? And it just kept coming up and coming up. And it was pretty much like therapy helped me go through the boxes eventually, but it took like months and months and months.
What did you realize was actually keeping you from going through them?
So I think part of it was like, I didn't really know what all was in them. But what I do know is that, so my mom has this tendency to like hold on to a lot of stuff, but like
just, I mean, not like her house is like full of junk or anything. It's not, but maybe her garage is. But like, she'll just have like bins of stuff, and it's like she moved this. And so at some point she decided, like, you know, these boxes are Sarah's. To me, it felt like some of them was probably like stuff that she saved from throughout my childhood that she didn't get rid of. And so then now she wanted to get rid of it, but she felt bad like she couldn't get rid of it because it was stuff from my childhood. And so she dumped it on me like, well, it's your childhood, so here you go.
Yeah.
So that was the issue. So I did, I went through them all and I got rid of, I sorted all of them one day. The thing that happened was my husband offered to bring them in the house one at a time when I was like watching, I had a movie on in the living room and I was, it was when I was organizing stuff for our closets and we were really making this big push like a few weeks ago. And he said like, well, what if I just bring one in and you just go through it and then see what happens. And if you decide you want to do more, just yell for me. And I'll, he was cleaning the garage at the time. I'll bring another one in and I'll take the stuff out. If you make like a donation pile and a garbage pile or whatever, I'll move it all for you. So it like kind of took the whole like physical aspect of it. So I could just sit in there and focus on sorting it. And I think that ended up being kind of like the key because I put on a movie. I'm pretty sure it was London Has Fallen.
That's one of your go-to feel-good movies.
It really is. Like, I don't know. You might be surprised to hear that, sorry.
But
but that action sequence when the city starts to blow up is just, it's really crazy. Well done.
It's so
It's
good.
Like just insane. So yeah, I put that on and then he brought in the first bin and I went through it and I ended up going through all of them and I got it down to like, we donated a bunch of stuff. Some stuff I threw away and then I had one bin that I was kind of throwing stuff in where I felt like I need to look at this again later. And so there's one bin that I have to like re-go through that was like the stuff I couldn't figure out what to do with on the first try. So,
so was it a lot of like personal stuff like that was personal to your life or was it like school papers and things? Because I feel like my parents saved like a lot of my school papers, coloring book drawings and things that I'm just like, I don't even care about anymore.
Yeah, there like, wasn't really. So some of it was definitely like my mom accidentally gave it to me. It shouldn't have been given to me because some of it was my sister's stuff. Oh, okay. Like some of it would be like stuff that she had drawn or report cards of hers or like stuff like that. But there was some little projects I'd done or mostly like certificates or like awards that I won.
Okay.
And report cards or like certain test results, like of like the big test when you're a little kid and they're trying to, I don't know, figure out what to do with you. Those things. And then a lot of pictures. There was like a few small things that my mom had made me whenever I was little and little things like that. But it definitely felt like the kind of stuff that's like more like your parents hang on to it if they're like back at the house that you grew up in. It's like if you have some old room where your old stuff is or something, it might be in there. But like my mom sold that house that I grew up in like when I was 18. So I haven't had a home to go back to like that in that sense, like ever because
that's
I moved
interesting
because
I don't have that either. I don't have a room in my parents' house.
Yeah, I moved out and she sold the house a few months later. So
that's
so,
interesting
like,
to think about like what happens to all of that stuff for people that don't.
Yeah, so it ended up in these boxes. Yeah. One fun thing, though, in the boxes, which I think we'll do an episode on this in the future because it's really funny and I just, I don't know, I feel like I can find something to talk about publicly that's okay to say, was some like of the stuff was like, going. You know where I'm going with this. So some of the stuff was definitely just my mom's, not my sister's or mine. And actually, like, she had a spiral notebook in there from 1980 to 1982, which I was born in July of 1982. And, this notebook, most of the stuff, a lot of it was written in like 1980 and in there several pages back because I kind of flipped through it. I was like, what is this? And I'm like, whoa, the date on here is like before I was born, which is weird because, you know, your mom, like, does she exist before you're born? I don't know. So my mom had me when she was 25. So at this point, she would have been like 23.
Wow.
And in the notebook, which is weird, like my mom was 23 once. What? Which is even weirder to me to think about now because I'm so much older than that now that it's like, oh my gosh, an almost baby was writing this notebook.
She would seem so young, yeah.
Yeah, a 23-year-old, like, writing this notebook. Anyways, somewhere in that notebook, there is a pro-con list she wrote about my dad. They were not married at the point. So she was dating him, and I think she was deciding if she would stay with him
or
not.
And they weren't married very long, so my inkling is that the con side was longer than the pro
right.
side.
Right. The cons made sense to me. So,
but she decided to go
so,
for it.
So, yeah,
anyway.
They got married. She likes to make sure I know that she was not pregnant whenever they got married. She actually wanted to get married. So they got married. They were married for a little while. She got pregnant. She had
she did a pros and cons list. She got married.
Yeah. So
pregnant.
I was born in the middle of 1982 and they separated in sometime in 1983 because I was like close to one, but I don't think I was even one whenever she moved out to start getting a divorce. So anyways, she had this pro con list in there, which is like hilarious and weird and amazing to find. Did
the pros outweigh the cons? Because, I mean, she decided pro.
I mean, she apparently decided that they did, but, I mean, I don't think they did. So.
I mean, I feel like if she was, like, still married to your dad and they had this, like, great marriage their whole life or something, then this would be, like, an amazing sort of, like, recommendation for making a pros and cons list when you want to get married.
Right, but she made the list and then she married him and then they got divorced kind of quickly. So, yeah, it didn't work out. So she should have maybe thought about the cons list a little bit more. But it was just so weird because you're just thinking, like, this was written in, like, 1980, I think, is what the date was on that one, because they knew each other in high school. So this was in their early 20s. And so she'd known him for a good number of years by then. It was just so weird because it just felt like this strange, like, time capsule that I shouldn't have had access to, but I did. There was all sorts of other stuff in the notebook, too. So.
Wow.
It was like this kind of like journal-y, not like entries of like thoughts or anything, but she was definitely doing these kinds of like thinking through her life or like planning out her life. Or there was even a page called titled Saying No, and it was like tips on how to say no better, which I thought was interesting because I'm like, man, that's like a topic that comes up now. And she was writing it.
Yeah, she was way ahead of her time.
How to be like more assertive and saying no. And I'll dig that back out though. I put that in the bin to like save because I was like, I'm going to look at it again because it's just so funny to me and so weird and just really cool. So that was a positive side effect of finding those bins, but mostly the bins were like really hard for me to go through. It was really, but honestly, it was really hard for me to have them here, apparently, because I was trying so hard not to look at them that I was looking at them for like 6 years or something.
Yeah. I mean, you were so far removed from like your life being what was in those bins.
Right. Right. And I mean, I have to say, like, it's not like bins from my childhood are like for sure going to be good or bad things. I had like a rough childhood. It wasn't all bad because what is, but I mean, there's like a lot of like emotional landmines there that could
be. You have no idea how you're gonna feel when you pick certain things up. I mean, it could seem like something innocuous, but then you like pick it up.
Right. So like the last bin that I have to go through that ended up being the one that I threw stuff in that I just couldn't figure out what to do with. There's like a lot of pictures in there, which I don't know if I'll ever look at them very closely. I'll probably just like mail them back to my mom. And a lot of stuff like that where it was just like just way too direct of a reminder of my childhood, which had some pretty low lows. But there were also some nice things. There was one thing I actually asked my mom about a few years ago. I said, do you know where this art print ended up that had hung on our, it was hanging in our hallway like my whole life pretty much, or as far back as I could possibly remember. And it was just this art that was made at like some kind of like festival or something, but it was a silhouette of me when I was 5. And it was hanging in our hallway, like, ever since then. And actually, in one of the pictures I found in the box, you can see it in the hallway, and I'm, like, 6 years old. So I was like, I knew I wasn't misremembering how long it was up. And it just was already there, always there. And I asked her, like, she knew where it was, and she said, no, it's probably, like, packed in a box somewhere after she moved. And that was actually in the boxes. So I did find that, at least. So I was excited, because I always kind of thought if I came across it, I would like to put it in my house now. Because something about it, I just always liked it when I was little, and it just felt like this kind of, I don't know. It was just cute, and it's, like, me when I'm 5, so that's weird.
Yeah. That's nice.
So it was a positive thing to find it, but, and I made a deal with myself. I kind of like, I have these little boxes on my living room bookcases along the bottom. They're these small little storage boxes, decorative boxes. And I assigned one box that I said, like, out of all these bins, like, if there's something in there I want to keep, I can have one box worth of stuff in there, like, that has, like, really no purpose in my house. Like, it doesn't, it's not like I'm ever going to, like, it doesn't help my house function. So I don't want a ton of it, but I can have, like, one box of sentimental whatever stuff if something in there means something to me. So, which I ended up finding a bunch of notes too from high school that I exchanged with Kim.
Oh my gosh, I was just about to say.
So I made a box for that too, like stuff. I have a box for like marriage stuff or like when we were dating and like getting ready to get married. And then I have a box for Kim stuff because especially I found those high school notes, which was really funny. And then I have a box for like my childhood, like my family stuff. And I think that's a good amount of sentiment in my house.
I had to make a box like that too when I was going through my stuff getting ready to move. I had a huge bin of stuff that I was just throwing in there that was from me, and some of it was my partner's stuff, like from stuff that he has that's like keepsakey or from his parents. And we were just sort of like keeping like cards and any mementos or anything that we had from like trips we had taken in this huge plastic, like one of those like so many gallon bins. And so we sat down one day and it was a big project, like going through that bin together. But I did find a huge stack of notes from high school.
Yeah.
And a lot of stuff from high school. But we wrote each other a lot of notes.
Yeah.
Sarah and I shared a locker for, was it junior and senior year or was it just senior year? I can't remember.
I think it was at least, I think it was probably 2 years. Yeah.
I think it was maybe even sophomore.
And I feel like we started in 10th grade. Yeah.
Yeah. And we, so we shared a locker. So we would like go to the locker and like leave a note in the locker for the other one. And then.
Because we didn't have classes together. So the locker was like the meeting.
Yeah. We never really had classes together. Yeah. So the locker was like our point of like intersect. So we would just write each other notes pretty much.
And also my locker location sucked.
Yeah. So it just, it was convenient because one of us could pick like a locker that was better, and we had like basically two lockers to choose from every year.
Yeah.
So, and I oh my gosh, I'm just remembering this. One year, I put something, a book, in my actual locker, but I think we were using your locker or vice versa. I don't know, but I had it in the other locker, and I didn't know the combination. And I needed that book for class, and I just never got it out. And I just borrowed a book.
It's
you know,
still
they would
there.
Have those loaner books sometimes in classes. Like, if you borrow your book, you can have this one. And I just ended up permanently taking a loaner because my actual book that was assigned to me was stuck in that locker. I didn't know the combination.
It was in our second locker. We forgot how to access.
I didn't bother to learn it because it wasn't, like, technically my locker. But, yeah, so we would write each other notes pretty much every class period or at least a few times a day. And many, many of these notes like ended up still in my keepsake stuff, and I kept them, and it was really funny. Like, it was hard not to get bogged down and just like reading all of them.
Yeah, I found a bunch. I read a few, but I put them aside and I was like, I'll go through them, and I figured we can
look at them and laugh
one day.
Oh my gosh, they're just so funny. Yeah, because mostly they're like really, really embarrassing and funny. Some of it is like mentions things that I totally forgot about.
Yeah.
But it was just, it was really funny because we mentioned a lot of like inside jokes, and there's like doodles on there and nicknames.
Yeah,
it's like,
so
we should definitely do an episode where we kind of revisit some of that stuff because it's really, really funny to look at now. Because we were what, like 15, 16?
Yeah, 15, 16, 17. Oh my gosh. Yeah, that's funny time. Yeah. So anyways, for me, the box thing was like totally unexpected that it was going to end up being related to therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like a really nice and unexpected side effect of therapy that I didn't go to therapy for that. I didn't think about it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know it was going to come up. But because I was going to therapy for all that time and working through all this stuff, that was something that got, that I feel like is fixed. That got fixed for me. So that was a really nice side effect.
Yeah.
So that's one of those things that's not
yeah,
so
because sometimes you don't even realize, like, it seems like this, like, small thing or this thing that's unrelated to anything you would ever talk about, but then it ends up helping you out, and you realize that maybe that was something that was, like, weighing you down in some way or, like...
Yeah, yeah.
But going back to a sort of accidental resolution I'm doing that I normally wouldn't choose to do, I have noticed a really sort of annoying, weird trend with how people talk about TV and productivity and how the two are related.
Mm-hmm.
So I know this isn't the only person that's ever said anything like this, but it's the only person that I can think of right now. But Gillian Anderson, I remember one time on, it was either Instagram or her Twitter, she was talking about how she doesn't watch TV.
Okay, for a second, I was like, I was thinking like, who's Gillian Anderson? And I was thinking like, am I thinking of the wrong person? For a minute there, I thought you were going to give me like a fitness inspiration quote for some reason. Like rude fitness quotes from whatever, Jillian Michaels. That's what I thought you were going to do.
Oh, Jillian.
Like, this
wrong
is
Jillian.
Not for me.
That's
but
the
anyways,
wrong Jillian. This is X-Files Jillian Anderson. This is the fall
this
Jillian
is the
Anderson.
Fall Jillian, Kim.
Oh my gosh. Don't get Sarah started on the fall.
Yeah,
oh
don't God. Get me started on the fall.
And how attracted you are to the horrible murderer on the fall. We all get it, okay?
I can't help it.
We get it. Like, there's
I
no one hotter than the
so
horrible murdering rapist on the fall.
I know. He's horrible, but he's just so lovable. He's not, but he is. Okay, her quote. What was it? I'm ready to be inspired.
She was talking about how she doesn't watch TV. So it was actually like kind of the opposite of being inspired.
Oh, God. This is like when Joanna on Fixer Upper, sorry, Gaines family, says like how they don't watch TV. And I'm like, but you're on TV.
Yeah.
So don't try and act like you're better than me
TV
now because I watch TV. I'm watching your freaking
show.
Yeah,
Joanna Anderson, like her job is TV.
Yeah.
And then she like doesn't watch TV or it was related to some sort of like productivity or things that she likes to do or how she doesn't have a lot of free time.
I'm productive
so
while I watch TV. I watch Buffy while I work every single day.
So this isn't like meant to be like a dig at Gillian Anderson, but just in general, I see that a lot mentioned in tandem with like, oh, but I like to be productive, so I don't watch TV.
Oh,
and you
yeah,
and I
yeah.
have been annoyed by that before because TV
is
something that we super enjoy.
Yeah. I do. I have a lot of projects I work on. I do a lot of stuff and I love TV.
Yeah.
Also.
So I have been a lot more productive in 2018. And as a result of that, I have sort of accidentally watched much less TV.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going to say like, oh, less TV equals more productivity. It's just because I don't have as much time. So as a result, I've had to be more, I guess, picky about what I am watching. Mm-hmm. Not just like cutting out TV as a whole, but just sort of like picking like the few shows. It's kind of like that weird off season for a lot of TV. So it's been easier to sort of just pick out a few shows. Mm-hmm. I'm still like, can't wait till like The Good Place like comes back. I'm like sad that it's like off now and things like that. And just not diving into like, maybe not starting like new shows like Broadchurch. I haven't started that yet, but I will. Like,
you should.
I still want to watch a lot of TV, but I think that in general, I don't know. I just think that we're both like, we both think that TV is kind of an important part of our self-care sometimes, like watching something funny or just taking a break and like turning your brain off. Like it really works.
Yeah, and people, I enjoy like just stories that people come up with and write. Mm-hmm. Like I really like to read because I like fiction a lot because I like those kinds of stories, and TV is the same thing for me, that you can dive into like a really long-term kind of watching of characters in a story.
Yeah, and that's a really good point, actually, because I think that we're both, in our own way, writers. And that's the first time I'm saying this, actually. I'm making it official on our podcast.
Yeah, like, I was just like, writers. Whoa, did Kim just call herself a writer?
Yeah, we're both writers. Yeah. And I think, and something that I'm trying to get back into, too, is just like blogging and sharing more stories and also working on personal writing
projects.
I'm
sorry, everyone that reads my blog. I write blog posts in my head all the time, and I keep forgetting to actually, like, do them.
It's hard. I wish you would do them.
I know.
Because I know you write blog posts in your head all the time.
I do.
But you also have your own writing projects that you're doing. So if you're devoting time to that, and it's hard. It takes a lot of time. But I am trying to like put more time to sharing more like outwardly instead of just working on my own. Because I have a personal journal. And then I do the same thing. Like I think of things that I want to blog about. And then once it's actually like time to like sit down and blog, I'm just feeling blah or like uninspired. So it just doesn't happen. I need to blog on my phone more. Didn't you write a blog post about blogging on your phone?
Yeah, you did.
You did. You were like, blog more, blog on your phone. Yeah.
Yeah, the WordPress.com blog. See,
I saw that.
Use the WordPress app.
Yeah. And I mean, I use WordPress, so.
Yeah.
Hi, WordPress.
Anyway. Hi, team.
We're just like throwing out a lot of.
I know. I don't know.
But all of that is to just say it's like a balance, of course. But TV can be really important and inspiring when you are sort of you have like the mind of a writer, or you like to write, especially like comedy or TV or like script writing and things like that. Mm-hmm. If you find that interesting and it's something that inspires you creatively, then TV can be like an awesome outlet for that or awesome inspiration for that.
Yeah.
I've been rereading Mindy Kaling's book again. Mm-hmm. I think her first one, Is Everybody Hanging Out Without Me? Mm-hmm. I reread it like 2 times a year. Yeah, I totally love it. And she talks about that a lot too. Like,
okay, that's someone that's definitely like really good friends with me, but doesn't know it. I have zero doubt that if we met, we would be really great friends really quickly.
0% doubt.
It's like just, it's already there. Yeah.
I mean, you just bring her an Egg McMuffin. Yes. And you sit down and you're like, hey, girl. Like,
and you hop on her best friend here.
Yeah. Yeah. It's super easy. but she talks in her book a lot about like growing up and watching silly TV and comedies and like Monty Python and all of that. And that was a big part of her childhood and something that she loved consistently that really shaped her as a comedy writer. I think it can be like a really inspiring thing. It can be like really good for self-care. It can be something that like is cathartic. If you're watching This Is Us or if you're watching like, certain shows, it can be really cathartic to just have that outlet too. So
I actually saw I think it was an Instagram story earlier that Mandy Moore did at some event they were at where they said like a guy was on stage and he said, This Is Us is now the most popular show on TV.
Oh, wow.
Like,
really?
Whoa.
I'm not surprised by that. I already thought in the world.
I mean, on TV, I guess, like maybe currently airing. I don't know.
I guess TV is in the world.
Yeah. Like it's what, on another planet? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he didn't say anything else. So it wasn't like he was like on network TV or on whatever night or whatever. He just said on TV. So maybe it is. Maybe I'm just spreading lies. I don't know.
I don't know if that's – I mean, it doesn't surprise me with like everything that I've seen. It's definitely like the most tweeted about and talked about on social media show that I see for sure.
Yeah, I guess so.
When it's on.
Well, if you follow me on Twitter, you know that basically every time I tweet about This Is Us, it's just to talk about how much I love Randall.
Oh my gosh, Randall.
I think I've mentioned other stuff maybe like 2 times possibly, but usually I just end up doing a Randall tweet.
Are they spinning off Randall yet?
I know. I could just watch an entire show that's just Randall and his family, like just in his house. Like I don't need to know what the rest of his extended family is doing. I don't really care.
And honestly, absolutely no disrespect to everyone else on that show, but Sterling K. Brown is just like –
Yeah, he's just great.
He's just killing it in that role. Yeah, he's just so good.
Like, I also, I mean, I do really like some of the flashback stuff too. Like with their parents when they're younger, I do like a good amount of that stuff. And at first I was a little iffy on it because flashbacks and like old person makeup and all that's always a little weird to me.
I feel like it's gotten so much better, don't you? Like the makeup.
Yeah.
Have you noticed that? Like in the second season, I feel like the makeup has gotten a lot better.
Yeah, I do think it is better. It's more believable for sure. So that's always a little bit iffy to me, but I do like that. But then just overall, if I had to just take out one part of the show and make a whole show, it would really just be Randall.
I love the way that he and Beth like interact with each other. They have such a great marriage.
Let me find my tweet because I thought this was so funny.
Like their TV marriage is.
Yeah, they're so great. That's one thing I really love about it too, is because like it kind of, their marriage kind of gives me that same like Friday Night Lights vibe of like the Taylors, like a really solid, great marriage where it's like not everything is always perfect and they're not perfect, but they're definitely like a really solid couple who is always on the other one's team.
Yeah, like instead of just like betrayal together
and all that kind of crap. It's always
for just their like drama's sake. Yeah.
Yeah, so I really, really like them. No, one thing I, this tweet, I found a tweet that I did a little while ago, I guess it was like last month, about when they're starting their own business. And he's like, Randall says, do some good, don't go broke. Company motto, write it down. And Beth's like, I'm not writing that down. He's like, it's cool, I already memorized it. Just like, he is just like such a cute, enthusiastic nerd about everything.
And that just says everything about their relationship right there. Like, he's going to go over the top with something. She's trying to reel him back in and he's like, too late.
Yeah, I have another one, which I also really love. I promise I won't just like read quotes that Randall and Beth said. But
and now for our Hey Bestie segment, Sarah reads Twitter.
I know, here's where I read my tweets. No, I love this one too, because it's like whenever Kevin is doing his rehab stuff or he's having problems and he's like, when I think about how angry I am with him, I'm going to take a deep breath and force myself to say, we're here for you, Kevin. And then she says, that's some white people level repression. And he says, well, I was raised by white people. And she goes, everybody knows. Just love it.
Oh my gosh,
I just love it so much. But anyways, he's just like such a nerd, and he's so enthusiastic and just like so corny. Yeah, and I even love like flashback young Randall, like just watching how he got to be who he is. They're all white and he's black, so like it's pretty obvious no one's ever like mistaking him for their biological child. So it just adds this whole other layer to him as a little kid. And then just seeing like he has the life out of the three of them. It's like he's the one with the really great marriage, the kids that he's really great with, the nice house, and just a solid, solid family that he made for himself, which is really nice.
Yeah, for sure.
I really appreciate a big corny nerd about everything. Someone who's just enthusiastic and not embarrassed by it is always for me.
I don't think this is a spoiler because Black Panther has been out for a while. But, and I mean, he's in Black Panther, which I didn't even realize. But I feel like they also, there's like a couple parts where like he does use his power of tears in that movie. Because
his
nobody tears.
I wonder if he'll use it on Saturday Night Live.
Like, I don't know. That might be, I mean, that's a big challenge for him. Can he use his power of tears on Saturday Night Live?
Live.
I would like to see those live tears. I mean, nobody cry. I mean, if he even starts to cry in anything, I'm just done.
Then you
like,
start to cry.
Yeah, I'm just, it's over with.
He tears up and you sob.
Oh my God. I don't know what episode it was, but recently, I think it might have been the most recent episode or the one before it, where he, what, it was like they were dealing with a lot of flashbacks leading up to the dad's death. And it was getting very much like tied to all the children dealing with that and flashing back and forward. And it was in present day and he was with his family and there was that lizard that died. And so he started talking about when you lose something to like that whole group of like kids.
Oh,
like, when you lose
something
and what it's like to, because the lizard's dead now. We need to talk about how to say goodbye. But he clearly started talking in a way where like he wasn't talking about the lizard anymore. It was definitely about like his own issues and his dad's death. And so Beth and both of the kids were like, no. Like,
Please get out of here.
You're done. Like, we're
good. Do not do this like lizard
eulogy. And they just like shut him down because they knew he was just going to like emotionally monologue. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what I love about the show too is that it's like in on that with us. Like they know that like Randall is going to be super emotional and do a monologue like almost every episode. And even his family is like, oh my God, here we go again. Like, it's just like really funny.
Cut to Beth's monologue to stop him from doing his like emotional monologue. Yeah. So great.
And the kids like look at each other like, oh my gosh,
our dad is so embarrassing.
He just he has to go deep on everything.
Yeah, it's so cute, it's so nice. So other than Randall, who else do you like on a currently airing TV show? And well, I say currently like, just so I don't accidentally talk about Buffy or Veronica Mars for like 2.5 hours. So we're limiting it.
I think NBC is really strong this season with TV because they have This Is Us and they have The Good Place.
Oh, gosh. I love The Good Place.
The Good Place, too. Like, it's probably my favorite new show for sure.
Yeah. It's so good.
And I cannot get enough of Janet. Like, every single thing that Janet does. Every single thing that Janet says, like her awkwardness and her I'm not a robot. And
I love every time they try and refer to her as something and she's like, not a robot or.
Yeah. Did you see recently she responded to a tweet on Twitter?
Yes.
Where somebody said like her character was
not
like,
a robot. A
robot. Yeah. And she just responded and said, not a robot.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was great.
I love it.
Yeah. It's so funny. And she's just like, so she has this like innocence about her, but the show has sort of turned her into a real character with growth too, which I think is probably a huge challenge because she's not supposed to, she's not human.
And but she's also not a robot.
But she's also not a robot. So she interacts with people in this like really awkward way and she's supposed to sort of like reset constantly and not really get attached to anyone. But this particular Janet, she has come to be really attached to the humans in the show and she has formed relationships and she's learned things. That's just like a really interesting part of the show too, just as a character. Like you're supposed to have this character that isn't showing emotion or showing humanity that is now like part of like the human group too. And she's just hilarious. Like she's so funny. Like her just like blunt observations about stuff and all. And her constant cheeriness when it's like super inappropriate.
Yeah.
It's hilarious. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so funny. I love it. Yeah,
and the fact that she has really a bad counterpart in The Bad Place too.
It's bad, Jamie.
It's so funny. Yeah. It makes me laugh so hard. Like just like Darcy Carden is just like, she's amazing on that show.
Yeah. That whole show is just really, really good. And it's optimism. It feels like a show where even if you didn't know it was at all connected to anyone who had anything to do with Parks and Rec, you would like sense it. Yeah, it just has something. It has a really similar tone and feeling, but while being a totally different show with totally different kinds of characters, which I really love.
Yeah, it's Michael Schur who did Parks and Rec, and he also does Brooklyn Nine-Nine. And I think a really strong indicator of that is he never takes the negative way out in order to create drama on his shows. He has people in healthy relationships and positive relationships.
Yeah, I appreciate that because so many pieces of a lot of shows where it's like, oh, the drama's coming or something. It's just someone just being crappy to somebody else or like, oh, there's like a cheating scandal or like something like that that's just not.
Which that can happen. I mean, it happens and that can play into a story, but it's kind of a cop-out if that's the only way that you're creating
drama. And
that's
like all the time drama comes up is just based on things like that.
Yeah, and I feel like it's a lot of times it's assumed if you have two characters that are getting together, one of them's going to cheat or something bad is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And like Leslie and Ben and April and Andy. Like,
yeah, and I mean, get like putting couples together in a show where they've been, it's been like a will they or won't they situation can be hard for a show to keep going after that. And maybe it shouldn't, but also, like, maybe don't set up your whole show to be will they eventually get together or not and just have the stuff come from other places, too. So it's not just all about that. So it doesn't matter. But
yeah, that's funny because when you think about, like, shows like Friends, because the big will they, won't they was obviously, like, Ross and Rachel. Like, they drove that out for such a long time. There were enough, like, negative things that happened between the two of them just because they needed to extend the drama out over, like, 9 seasons of television that by the time that it got to the will they, it was like, well, should they at this point? It doesn't really seem like
suited to each other. It wouldn't be a good idea. Yeah.
Yeah, it already seemed like they went through so much that they had already decided that won't they was the way to go. But then all of a sudden it was like, nope, we're just going to stick them together because all that drama was just so that we could drag the show out.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm glad that TV is kind of moving away from that. I mean, Friends obviously was huge and it had its day, but I think that that's just – that was sort of like – that storyline jumping the
shark
was for me.
90s. Yeah, yeah, that was really 90s. So speaking of the will they or won't they situation, that reminded me of the show Elementary, which is like a Sherlock character show on CBS. The Watson character is a woman. So whenever it first started, people were like wondering if their relationship would be different than like the Sherlock and Watson dynamic or whatever, or if they would get together. And there was always stuff going around like, oh, did they have like a moment? Are they gonna get together? But I've really appreciated it that they had like no sexual tension between them, or there's no like, oh, they're gonna hook up, or they did hook up and now they're being awkward with each other. They've become really, really close and are really important to each other, but it's not about them hooking up, which I really appreciate.
Yeah, that's really refreshing. I feel like there's enough in Sherlock to explore without having to go there, too.
Right. So they can do all sorts of cases and they can have other people in their lives.
I wonder if part of the instinct to do that on TV that, I mean, attractive people are in shows, like you cast.
Yeah. More, they, like, I mean, they're attractive people who could hook up. But
so then you think, like, why aren't these people attracted to each other? They're both above average attractiveness. So.
Yeah, that's true.
But I also think that we're, well, I don't know if there's so much.
So the key
that,
is cast more like schleppy looking people so you won't feel obligated to hook them up
it's,
with everyone.
I mean, attractiveness comes from different places. It's not always, but I feel like maybe like when you're thinking about two characters, you're like, oh, we cast very attractive people on purpose, so why aren't they just hooking up?
Yeah, I mean, if they're going around town like doing their investigation or whatever, and literally every other person they see is less attractive.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone in the background, all these like extras, like yeah, they look terrible compared
did
to
not
like,
have all
Lucy
their hair
Liu
and makeup
and
done.
Miller. Yeah, yeah. So
yeah, maybe that is it. But anyways, I appreciate that. I really like her.
Did you see recently? I was tweeting about this, and I kind of had to tell myself, like, don't tweet, like, 900 tweets about the character played by Sheree Agdashilu, Christian, on The Expanse. Do you watch The Expanse?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
The Expanse is a show that I always, like, DVR and watch way, way, way too late. So I just caught up on the most recent season, which I think it might be about to air in another few months, like, the next season. So I'm always way behind. But there's a character on there, Christian. First of all, the first thing that I noticed about her is that, I mean, she's an awesome character. She's like a woman who, I mean, it's in like a different universe. It's like a sci-fi show. So it's set in a different kind of futuristic universe. But she works for like basically what's the UN. It is the United Nations, still like a future version representing Earth. And she is like powerful and the best politician ever. Like she's always like nine steps in front of everyone, and she's just awesome. And she dresses on the show in these like bright, colorful, beautiful wraps and scarves, and she looks amazing. Like every single scene too, she's just like dressed.
Oh,
like,
that's
I
interesting, because usually when you try to like, when you picture, when you hear someone say there's a sci-fi show set in the future and you kind of picture it, you instantly go to, okay, so they're all wearing like a gray jumpsuit.
Yeah, like a jumpsuit.
Or
like
a white
uniform.
Some like oddly white amount of clothing, or just, yeah, like everything's really drab.
Yeah. So I appreciate
like
the
show. Like a futuristic
for,
mechanic.
Yeah. Yeah, she's not. Yeah, it's a total opposite of that. And I feel like the show in general feels a little bit more natural and realistic in that way, because there's definitely like crews flying around in space that are dressed in like military gear. Like there's but it's very functional, because if you're out in space and you're like doing missions and stuff, you're wearing that kind of thing. But then for her, it's like she's just representing like herself and her culture, and the costuming for her character specifically. Just I look forward to it every single episode. She looks amazing. Cool. So I posted a couple of pictures on my Twitter recently, and I could have posted like 25 more, because every time I see her, it's like,
but you were like, don't make this into a fan Twitter. Yeah. So I had one more character that I thought of on a current show who I really, really love. And that is Tina on Bob's Burgers.
Oh my gosh.
I mean,
she's like an all time favorite person. For
right.
Me, for sure.
She
yeah.
writes erotic friend fiction. Which I just, I love
yeah,
it so
butt-centric
much.
Erotic friend fiction.
Yeah, and she, like, stares at butts, and she really just wants to make out with Jimmy Jr. And I love how open she is to her family, like, when she'll tell her dad stuff. Like, she literally will talk to her dad about, like, all sorts of stuff that, like, you know, tween or teen girls might not normally want to bring up or whatever. And then watching Bob try and like figure out how to tell her how to shave her legs, it's like so cute.
Yeah, and I love like Linda just letting her be her. Just all Linda letting all the kids be quirky and who they are, and
yeah,
not shaming
who they
them
are
for anything.
Yeah. Yeah. She tries to push them out of their comfort zones a little bit, but she definitely lets them be who they are, which is really cute. Mm-hmm. And Tina's just so great. It's like such a great depiction of that age and just all the stuff that she does and says, and her reactions to things are just really fun to watch.
Another great depiction of a teen girl is Grown-ish, the Black-ish spinoff. Have you watched Grown-ish? But yeah, I think that show is one of the best depictions of what it's like to be a young adult, like going off to college, that I've ever seen. Specifically dealing with like things like drugs, sex, being off on your own, and being independent and thinking that you like have it all figured out, and then things are starting to go wrong, and how do you handle that? A lot of times it can be very sort of just like sitcom-y, like, oh, set up a situation and then the character like learns something and then it's over. Mm-hmm. And then facing those situations is like the thing in the episode.
Yeah.
Like it's a big deal. Like, oh, is Zoe going to do drugs? Oh, is Zoe going to have sex?
Yeah, that's nice because it's not like this is the drugs episode where Zoe addresses drugs once and for all and if she's going to do them or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And some of the decisions she makes may not be the decision that would be right for someone else her age, but they don't make it seem like it's a right or wrong choice either. They're not telling you like, oh, Zoe's good, Zoe's bad, she's just like she feels like very much a fully formed person. And I think having the background of her coming from Black-ish and growing up on that show and then spinning off, you do feel like she's like a real person. Like, oh, you know that she came from like a family.
Yeah, you know about her family. Her, so you're just like,
and yeah, you know about them and her relationship with her mom and dad. So you understand a little bit about her and that she's like smart and super capable. And you know why she's made the choices that she has that have led to her being at college now. So that really kind of makes the show a lot more fun to watch and a lot more engaging. And she actually is the age of the character that she's playing.
Yeah, she's really the actual cool right age for the person, which is really cool.
Yeah, so I appreciate that too a lot. And yeah, that's been really good.
Yeah, that's a good point. Me too, because that can be annoying.
Yeah, when someone's like
so much older. Yeah. They're like, I know what the teens are like.
Yeah. Like 90210, Dawson's Creek.
Mm-hmm.
They're like in their 30s. And
they're
it's
all
like,
a bit older.
People at my high school don't look like that. Like, we don't have like a greaser who's like 35. Should we?
We love a greaser who's 35.
Yes, Luke Perry was a 35-year-old greaser. Like, being like, I'm definitely a high school student.
What are you doing
student.
At this high school? Yeah.
And we're like feeling weird because nobody at our school looks like that.
Yeah. You're like, what has gone wrong here? Because nobody is giving off those Luke Perry vibes here.
That's it for this episode of Hey Bestie. Thanks for listening. Go to heybestie.com for show notes and links to everything we mentioned. And if you have a moment, we would love it if you could like, subscribe, and review on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app to help other people find us. Thanks. Bye.
When I wasn't feeling great, I was sort of subscribing, ascribing, is that what I'm trying to say? Ascribing that to? I think I'm trying to say ascribing, but I keep saying.
Is that a word? I don't
ascribing.
Know. I feel like you're making that up.
Yeah, is that a word? Ascribing?
I don't know.
What am I trying to say?
I don't know.